Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. We finished up today's program with part two of our series on heroin and its rise to what some are calling an epidemic here in our region. As we learned in part one, addicts of all ages are turning to heroin because it's both cheaper and easier to find than prescription pills. But as many users are finding out, getting clean from this powerful opiate is often a long and grueling task. In Maryland, statistics say that heroin has been on the rise for a number of years, and in 2010 surpassed alcohol as the leading abuse substance in the state. Baltimore has long been known as a hotbed of heroin abuse in the country, but the drug is apparently making its way to the Eastern Shore, and some say in a big way. Today we meet a man who battled drug abuse for years, specifically heroin. Prior to his drug addiction, Kevin Cranfield was a well-known personality in the skate and surf community here on the coast, and while he's been clean for almost 5 years, Cranfield says his battle with heroin was the most difficult of his life, and now he's taking things one day at a time, but he hopes others will see this journey as an inspiration to stay clean.
Heroin was definitely not my first drug of choice, so heroin came a little bit later down the road, but it came to just like with a lot of addicts how, you know, you're the one drug that you're into just isn't around, and all of a sudden somebody's like, well, hey, I got this, let's try this. Mm-hmm. And honestly and truly, the first time I tried it, I didn't like it. You know, the whole, like, once we did it, and we didn't shoot it, we snorted it. And got sick, you know, and then the nodding process. And I didn't really understand the high because I'm an uppers guy, you know. I was, my addiction basically based on, like, crack cocaine. And when I lived in California, it was crystal meth. I will say that with all the drugs, opiates are the hardest ones to get off of. And for myself, it was the hardest one for me to get off of.
How old were you when you took, you know, the turn towards the so-called recreational drugs, pot, drinking, into maybe what's considered the harder drugs, crack cocaine and heroin?
Well, my first time ever doing drugs, I was probably 14, you know, and then it was just it was stuff called Quicksilver. It was the stuff you huffed. You got it from the public library, you know, just like any of the huffing stuff. Then I stopped for a couple years, and the drugs for me really started probably when I was like 17, 18. And it went from just, you know, smoking weed and it just progressed really quick. Smoking weed to drinking to all of a sudden, before I knew it, my life was already out of control. I mean, it didn't take long for me. It went from weed to acid, you know, acid shrooms, all the psychedelics, and then it went within, I mean, I'm not even talking a year, you know, I started dabbling in with the harder drugs, crack cocaine and stuff like that.
Is there any moment while you were using those drugs and getting high that you thought, I'm losing control a little bit? And if you did feel that, what was it about the high that overrode those feelings of fear or cautiousness?
Honestly and truly, it's crazy because it was, I actually remember it kind of like it was yesterday when I started realizing that I didn't use like my friends did. When I say use and getting high, it's alcohol, it's all of it. It's all mixed in together for me. And I approached some friends and, you know, tried to start changing my life then. Didn't work. But the simple fact was the drugs made me feel like somebody. You know, I mean, when I was high or when I was loaded, I was like even more outgoing. I could talk to the females better. You know, all those little, like, you know, the insecurities that I had that the people don't really recognize. And when I had drugs, I had no insecurities. You know, I thought I was the man. You know what I mean? And that was the first, like, grab. That was the first thing that I loved about it. It's just that way, the power that I, you know, I felt powerful.
Going from that feeling of feeling powerful to, you know, you talk to anybody who's been through this process and realized that they needed to get over it or recover, they often say that they felt powerless to the drug. So when did it turn for you from a feeling of being powerful when on the drug to feeling powerless to the effects of the drug?
Well, I got put in my first detox in Southern California back in the early 2000s. But prior to that, I'd already known that I had issues. You know, I knew I had problems and started to, you know, all the problems that come with it, the securities that I had, the insecurities started getting bigger with the more I used. So the whole powerless thing, I mean, I knew from an early start that I was powerless over this stuff and that my life was going down a path that I never thought I would see it go down. And my first real surrender was probably the time, which was my first real serious thought of suicide, which was when I was actually getting ready to get married in 3 months. I was I'd been out on a bender for about 2 or 3 days, again living in Southern California, and I was riding down the road in my car and thought about going off the cliff. And I freaking pulled over and I called somebody and I said, there's just something wrong with my life. You know, and that was my first attempt. Now, mind you, I'm working on 5 years clean right now. That was, we're talking about nine or so years ago. Yeah.
Tell me about all those failed attempts to getting clean and why, in hindsight, you think that, you know, you didn't stay clean.
I didn't do it for myself. Even though inside, like I said, I mean, the whole time, like, I have friends and I hear people talk about, you know, other addicts that say that, you know, they never knew they had a problem. I knew I had a problem, you know, because I didn't really, my fun high wasn't really that long. And I used for almost 20 years. You know, it was, I got high, just like most addicts, for the reason of to escape. Because I felt like I didn't have the parents I should have had for the fact that, you know, we grew up in a low-income family and I didn't have what the kids had and all that kind of stuff that just built up and just stuck with me as I got older. I just 100% didn't surrender to it, you know. So I just started with the process of like, all right, I'm going to go to this detox. And I got in this detox and was scared to death, never done anything like it. I hadn't even been locked up yet, so I'd never been into that kind of environment before. And I stayed clean for a couple months. And then all of a sudden life showed up and I did not know how to handle life. You know, every humdrum thing of life, I got high over. If I was happy, sad, or indifferent, that's what I got high over. And when things started going rough, especially like when I first got high, my mother was on her deathbed, you know, and that's actually when my opiate addiction really kicked in. My mother had terminal bone cancer. I stole all her pills. You know, and I'm talking about a lot of pills. I mean, it got to a point to where when after I got out of my detox in California, came home, I had to, you know, if I'm 30-some years old then, I had to live with my family. My little sister would have heard my little niece and also my other sister's niece at my parents' trailer with my mother, and she was babysitting them. And then here comes her 30-year-old brother who they have to take the locks off the doors of the bathrooms and stuff because I was stealing my mom's pills. They hid the pills. And then finally I took all the pills. They didn't have any more. And started drinking her methadone. I can remember numerous times where I'm in the bathroom. Again, a 30-year-old man and my sister barging in the bathroom. And I was actually really using the bathroom and not getting high in there. But, you know, and it's just, that's when I think things really started coming to perspective. They're like, wow, this is really screwed up. You know, my life isn't like that. And on top of that, you know, my mom was in that house, and I was there when she passed. And, you know, my mother and I were very, very close. And the whole time I was stealing her pills.
Do you think in hindsight that your addiction took an exaggerated role or it intensified much quickly based on that situation and what you were seeing and your inability to handle grief with the situation in your mother's sickness?
Oh, totally. It was all guilt-ridden. After when she passed, tried to stay clean again, and I felt so guilty for what I did to my family. You know, I mean, I ended up doing all those things that I said I would never do. You know, I wasn't the type of addict that went out and like, you know, held up people, went, you know, robbed stores and stuff like that. I stole from the people that I knew I wasn't going to get in trouble with, which was my family. And when I mean I stole, I mean, besides the fact of just the physical things, the money, my parents' last $200 that they had put away, my mom in her pain pill and pain and all that, kind of like comatose because of the pain of the disease, I let her take the fall for the money. You know, as I'm in the bedroom in the back and I hear all this going on and my dad, you know, kind of tripping out and like, you know, what did you do with the money? That was our bill money, yada, yada, yada. And I felt guilty with all that, you know, and just could not, to save my life, let it go.
Tell me about when you made the decision almost 5 years ago to get clean and the process that it's been in staying clean for these 5 years.
It was December, my clean day is December 20th, 08. I actually, it was probably a few days prior to that, I'd been actively back to smoking crack again, you know, and then it wasn't so much as opiates, but it was Xanaxes. And I was going into a lot of benzo blackouts, not knowing what I was doing. And it got to the point of, like, my using was at a height of where, like, nobody knew I was doing it, or so I thought. Hiding in my house, couches in front of the door, paranoia. And then I went on a snowboard trip, and it was the last time I drank. I went on a snowboard trip a few weeks before the 20th of 08, December, and ended up with, and there was guys there that were in recovery, and I ended up saying, you know what, screw it. I'm over it, I want to drink. So I started drinking, and just guilt set in, came back home, continued to use for another probably like 5 days, and the last day that I used the benzos and the crack cocaine was basically trying to kill myself. I wanted to smoke and take as many pills as I possibly could, just because I was just done. I was like, I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to get this, you know? And I had this, like, we'll call it a moment of clarity, where I was like, all right, I'm going to give this thing one more shot. From that day on, like I said, December 20th of 08, I have put everything, just is what I, the effort I put into getting high, I've put into staying clean and into my recovery. And for me, it wasn't just about just stop using the drugs. It was about starting to understand me. Mm-hmm. You know, one, to deal with all the demons of my past, from not even so much as my using history, but even the stuff as a child, things that I felt that would just randomly pop up in my head. You know, I had to work with this stuff and learn how to deal with it. And then on top of that, learn to deal with everyday things with life, like paying bills and stuff I never did. You know, I just didn't care. The first 2 years were tough. You know, I wanted to use so much. You know, it just whatever happened. Anything that came down the path, it was like, whether it was a female involved. I mean, even things as simple as if my truck broke down or my cell phone got turned off. My first initial reaction, I can't handle this, I got to get high. But just to continue doing what I did in this process of recovery, it changed my life. I started getting tools. I started to be able to lift my head up a little bit higher. I started to be able to look people in the eye and be like, okay, yeah, I know what I did. You know, and I started doing the whole process of kind of making my rounds of people that I hurt and being like, okay, I know that I did this. I'm sorry, but what can I do to make this better? You know, and that still goes on today. Started doing over 4 years ago, I still do every single morning. You know, which are things are just, sometimes I still trip out on it. You know, I trip out on just, like, even being here and sitting and talking to you about this kind of stuff, it's like, it's something I never thought I would see. And I honestly thought that those insecurities I had and the voices in my head that kept me up and that would eventually be like, you know what, screw it, let's go get high. Yeah. You know, would never go away. And, you know, they've gone away and life shows up, you know, and I do have hard times, but I've got people that I can talk to.
Since you've been clean, you know, and this is a small town that we live in, and I know you're very, you know, you have a lot of friends, and you know, you're very well known in the surf and skate community, and did you find it difficult after you made the decision to get clean to overcome that stigma attached to you of all those years of using?
You know, I was the type of guy that when I got high, I'd tell you right off the bat. I mean, I was like, you know, really, like I said, the image of me, the outside, was this tough guy, and you know what, screw you, I don't care what you think. So in the beginning, when I first got clean, there was a couple people I was kind of shy around and did, because I knew that I hurt them, and they were very good friends of mine. But for the most part, I was very open about, like, hey, I'm trying to do, you know, when I first got clean, just like any guy, it's just like, you know, just posting it everywhere, you know, I'm getting clean, yada yada yada. But again, through this process and learning about how it works and getting some humility, you know, and getting humble, I really, like, I've laid off of that and kind of let my people see through my actions. You know, I know I have to earn the trust. And for the most part, I mean, some people are still skeptical, which, you know what, they have the right to be. You know, because I've said I'm going to do this before and gone right back out and done it again. Today, it's really about, you know, always just doing the next right thing. And if I do screw up, try to do my best right then and there to make that right.
We started this series on an uptick in heroin usage around this region. Does it surprise you that kids now are turning from prescription pills and using the hard stuff, as they say? And what would you say to parents or even kids that might be hearing this that have either taken that path or they're trying to get somebody off of that path?
Does it surprise me now? Not one bit. You know, with the whole, you know, the cracking down on the scripts and stuff like that, and also just with the money that it costs to get the scripts, heroin's cheaper. You know, and it's starting, obviously, you know, if you're doing this episode on it, it's easier to get around here now. To someone that's hearing this, that's in the, you know, in the grips of it, there's hope. There really is. And I'm not going to sit here and say that it's easy, but it's definitely worth it. You know, there's definitely a better way to live. Parents, hide the, if you are on prescription pills for pain or whatever, you know, lock them away. Put them somewhere. You know, the one thing I used to always tell people and I would joke about, I could walk into a normal household and 9 times out of 10, it wouldn't take me long for I would know where your prescription pills were. You know, like most people, it's, you know, you go to the sink, majority of people are right-handed, open up the right cupboard, and they're going to be lower than the glasses. You know what I mean? That's where people put them. If not, it's the commonplace, the medicine cabinet or bedside drawer. And kids know that, you know, and it's not just the fact of, you know, getting high from the drug, but it's also the money part. You know, again, like I said, I mean, you figure you're going $1 a milligram, and that's being nice, you know. So the stuff's expensive, and it's the way the kids, you know, that's the first start. It's like, oh, I can make some money off of this. And then all of a sudden, you know, at least I'll speak for myself, it's like I'm making money off. Well, let me try it at least. And then, but you know, before you know it, you're in this vicious cycle that you realize you can't get out of.
Do kids ever come to you or their parents come to you and say, you know, Kevin, we know you've been through this. How do I help my kid from not going through something like this?
Oh, definitely. It's been weird, you know. I've had it on both sides, with the kids coming to me and then the parents coming to me, and it's hard because, I mean, the one thing that, especially there's a crew of kids that like I really love them, you know. I took them under my wing, and you know, some of them are doing the right thing, and some of them are doing what we all, you know, what most of us did at that age. It's scary. But I've also heard some really good things where some of the kids are actually, a couple kids are trying to get help. Yeah. I hope maybe that it's because of what they saw me go through. You know, because some of those kids that I'm sitting here talking about, they not only knew me, like, getting clean, you know, they knew when I was getting high. I mean, I had some of these kids write me while I was in rehab. You know, you talk about pain. It's like, because my whole thing with like, where I worked and what I was doing was, it wasn't so much as, like, getting this group of kids together and to be, like, the, you know, the coolest surf skate kids in town. It was like to give them some type of meaning, you know, and to let them know, hey, look, there's a better way to live than to, and try to at least plant a seed, point them in the right direction. Because I try to be that person that they can go to, you know, when they're scared to go to maybe mom or dad. I can't say I'll never get high again, but what I can sit here and say, I don't ever want to get high again, you know. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure I don't put myself in that situation.
That was Kevin Cranfield speaking to me about his struggles with drug abuse and his hopes that the region will take what he calls the heroin epidemic very, very seriously. To learn more, click to our website, wamucoast.org. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection.